Hello and welcome to the Geek and Review Podcast. I'm Jeremy Pappas, alongside, as always, the man who served as the original model for the Crimson Cowl, Mr. Russell Jones. Russell.
You'd be surprised how heavy cowls can be. They're not even, you know, hoodish. You'd think, oh, it's just a hood. No. There's a lot that goes into a proper cowl. There's a difference between
a mask and a cowl.
Yes, absolutely.
A specific difference. I don't know what that difference is, but I know that there is a specific difference between the two.
Also, another specific difference between those things and whatever the hell it is that Scarlet Witch wears.
Yeah, some sort of weird,
like, headband.
Burger King, She-Ra, Princess of Power, crown headband thing.
And cue the House of M complete destruction of our podcast in 3, 2. Yeah.
What's happening, man?
A whole lot of stuff that is unfortunately not happening to me because PAX is going on.
Yeah.
Dragon Con is going on.
Yeah.
And I'm still, you know, hell, LSU's season opener is going on, and it's not even in town. It's in Texas. Right. Not that I really care too awful much about it, but it's a football game. I live here. They are paying my wife to go to school, so my loyalty is essentially bought.
Yahoo!
I'm saying I'm a sellout.
Yeah, that's okay, though.
But
it's not important, it's just sports.
Right, but all those things, they're happening outside of town.
Yeah.
They're happening in places that I am not.
Yeah.
So I will sit back and look at the internets and sigh. Just like that.
But we have a podcast. We have a lot of things to discuss. Upon said podcast, we will now cast our pod and discuss those things. That is the act of podcasting, is casting of
casting
the pod.
Casting the pod into the turbulent depths of the internet.
Right, exactly. So, after Batfleck happened, then we were told almost immediately afterward that Bryan Cranston was going to be Lex Luthor, which we mentioned briefly on the podcast last week.
Yeah, and also, at the initial phases, to me, kind of smacked as a, oh crap, let's damage control by releasing something that will make a lot of people kind of happy.
Right. It turns out that was bullshit. Bryan Cranston is not confirmed to be Lex Luthor.
Because we can't have nice things.
No, because we can't. Because, see, my original thought was, you know, at least DC is attempting, or the people behind the movie for DC, they're attempting to do a little damage control. Even though, again, we had the discussion last week, I think the Ben Affleck hatred of being Batman is nuts, but whatever.
Yeah.
At least they were trying to do a little internet damage control by giving, but no, they couldn't even, that wasn't even happening.
No.
I don't know who came up with that. I don't know where the hell that came from. But no, Bryan Cranston is not going to be Lex Luthor. Not at all happening. So, people are still upset about the Affleck thing, and we've discussed it, and I don't want to get into it. The thing that I love about this whole thing happened last week after we had gone off the air. Marvel comes out and says, "Oh, you know, Ultron in Avengers 2, that's going to be James Spader." Now people look at that and go, "What? Wait, what?" At any normal point in time, that would have had the internet go crazy. They would have been like, James Spader can't be Ultron, blah. But they
at the same time, they would then turn around and say, wait a minute, which one's James Spader?
Right, who's James Spader again? Who was the guy on James Spader? Oh, he's the guy from Boston Legal.
Yeah.
Really? But that is actually true. The funny thing about that to me is, it's like DC just is like running interference inadvertently because they wait for this thing and go, man, I guess now's a good time because people see that and go, James Spader, I don't get it, but at least it's not fucking Ben Affleck.
And see, this is the thing. If that is actually what happened, if they saw Batfleck and then someone on marketing went and said, James Spader, release it, go for it.
Dude, go now. They had
now,
that.
Now. There's a, and if they did, then it is a masterstroke.
It is.
Of marketing.
It is.
And especially coupled after the Bryan Cranston thing. Because this is, think about it. This is how the week went. You know, Batfleck. Miley Cyrus. Bryan Cranston as Lex Luthor. Syria happens somewhere in there, and everyone kind of goes, And then James Spader as Ultron.
Bryan Cranston is not.
Bryan Cranston is not Lex Luthor. The fires of Pompeii consume the internet.
Oh man,
that is how the week has been.
I have to say, if you discuss Ben Affleck, at some point in time, you have to discuss his partner in crime, Matt Damon. Matt Damon, I think, put it the best. He was asked about the whole Ben Affleck thing, and they're buddies from way back. And Matt Damon says something to the effect of, "I think everyone needs to calm down. It's Batman, not King Lear," which to me is hilariously true. Yes. Because you get wrapped up in stuff like this, and if you're a fan, and I wouldn't say I'm a diehard Batman fan. I don't go to bed with visions of the Bat in my brain. I like Batman a lot. I know a lot about Batman. I have at times in my life been a very, very huge proponent of Batman. But as of now, if you ask me who my favorite superhero was, it would definitely not be Batman. Mm-hmm. I love Batman, though. Batman's good people.
Yeah.
I have a hand-painted bat signal that I've had since I was very small that was painted for me when I was very small. I think when I was a baby or thereabouts, that I have actually hanging on my office door. So I enjoy Batman. But at the end of the day, you have to realize that it's just a movie. Nothing that happens in this movie is going to make Batman any less. Nothing that happens in any of these movies is going to make Batman any less. There was a thing that made you love Batman. That thing still exists. You can go and relive it anytime you want, whether it was the comics, whether it was the seriously fantastic and underrated Batman cartoon series, Batman the Animated Series. Whatever it was that got you to love Batman, that still exists. And this is true for anything we ever talk about as far as superhero movies are concerned. The worst feeling you should have when it comes to casting or treatment or quality of these movies is disappointment that they didn't do it better, but enragement, it's a little silly. Now, we can be a little silly sometimes. And God knows we are. But at the same time, again, the great thing about the comic book universe is they say things like, oh, well, they ruined so-and-so. No, they didn't. It's the same.
Yep.
You know, people say that about D&D. I'm like, oh, well, they ruined D&D. Really? Did they go out and collect all of the books you currently own and burn them? No. In fact, we were just discussing before, Russell currently has two D&D Next playtests running at the same time, and one of them, not the one that I'm participating in, but the other one, is not, the players just aren't connecting with it as well. So they're going to go back and do a 4th edition Eberron campaign. Now, Russell and I are both big proponents of 4th edition. If I had to say what my edition is, everyone has their edition, what my edition is, it has to be 4th edition. I started playing 2nd, I played 3rd, I played 3.5. I really loved 4th edition.
And you know, I think that, and after playing D&D Next and hearing the feedback from these players, especially the two brand new to D&D players that I've had, these are, I think, the ideal kind of people that 4th edition was made for, mm-hmm. and also the kind of people that the haters of 4th edition absolutely loathe. Mm-hmm. Because they played a lot of MMOs, they've played a lot of video games, they want to do the pen and paper thing, they want to have a group game night. And after playing D&D Next, you know, the feedback was stuff like, oh, there's really nothing for me to do except basic attack. I feel like I'm just a guy with a hammer. It's really boring. I want to heal more. I feel like I should be able to heal a little bit more. I want to play a healer. I don't feel like a healer. I kind of want to, you know, have something mm-hmm. that lets me heal a lot more often. All this other stuff about, well, I just, you know, the rogue gets a sneak attack every round, and the rogue's sitting off here gleefully murdering mm-hmm. everything that gets in front of her. Mm-hmm. But no one else is really getting that kind of cool stuff.
Right.
So,
which was a problem that they had in 3rd edition.
Yeah.
That they solved in 4th edition. Whatever you want to say about 4th edition D&D, they solved a lot of problems from 3rd edition that 3rd edition had, and I'm going to invite the wrath of the Pathfinder crew, that Pathfinder does not solve. Two problems right off the bat that are huge. Problem number one, at level one, you suck. At level two, you continue to suck. At level three, meh, you're okay. Then you start actually playing the game, which is why so many D&D games started at level three, because the first two levels were just like eating your fucking vegetables. Yes. You just didn't want to do it. And it's a game, people. You shouldn't, and in 4th edition, as a first level character, you could do shit. You couldn't do as much shit as you could do later, but you could still do stuff. Yep. I take it away from MMO player, because that's what a lot of people say, is, oh, it's for the MMO generation. It's a bunch of fat, nerdy WoW players who want to play WoW when they're not playing WoW. That's not true. It allows you to be more of a hero at first level. If you look at D&D as a heroic journey, you should be heroic from the beginning to the end. What was the last movie that you watched where the hero of the movie started out as a regular soldier guy and very slowly built up, and then he became a private first class, and then he became a lieutenant, and then he became a blah blah blah, and then he became a sergeant. And you see no movie is like that. Look at fucking Captain America. Captain America, the guy was in the army and he's a weakling and he's a private. They shoot him full of joy juice and he becomes fucking America's hero, Captain America. You want that? I mean, look at Peter Pan. Look at Robin Hood. I don't know why the fuck I said Peter Pan. Look at Robin Hood.
Peter Pan is a D&D experience. I might sit down and have to start writing that.
But look at Robin Hood. Robin Hood starts out as fucking Robin Hood.
Yep.
In D&D, you shouldn't have to start out as commoner to become, you know, Karzon the Conqueror of Worlds. You should kind of start out as a less cool version of Karzon the Conqueror of Worlds. Unless, in my opinion.
Unless specifically that is the type of game that you want to
right,
play.
If you want to play arguably, realistic, though, but most yeah. people are going to want to play that heroic type game. 4th edition did that very well.
Because that's where the intersection of all this meets. Mm-hmm. At some point, everyone wants to play a bigger-than-life, fantastic kind of hero. Right. Even if you start off as a commoner, you start off as the hero, in a number of different ways. Mm-hmm. They all intersect at some point. I need to feel like I'm rising above the rest of these, you know, non-heroes, the non-adventurers around me. I have passed my one-on-one interview, the resume has been accepted.
Right.
I have now started the career, which is adventuring, and yes, it is an actual career path.
Yes, it is. I am a hero. I am an adventurer.
Exactly. If levels 1 and 2 are meant to be a tutorial in how to play D&D, you should get through them as fast as humanly possible.
Right, which you never did in 3rd edition, and we're finding you are not doing in D&D next. It's the same slog.
Yes.
It's the same moving through. It's still deadly as shit. You still have 6 fucking hit points. You're still going to get your ass handed to you, and you're probably going to die.
Or at least get knocked unconscious.
Repeatedly, right.
Because, and
they made it much harder to die, which is
right. But again, all of this is still currently playtest. It has changed from playtest packet to packet. The next one is coming out next month. It could change again. Mm-hmm. But the trend we are seeing is towards that level of experience. Mm-hmm. And whether that stays or not, whether they add in the modules like they've discussed or not, that's the base experience that they are showing currently.
Right.
And, you know, for some people, the 4th edition base experience, for us especially, that's good. It's just, there are so many moving parts that I was loath to introduce 4th edition to absolutely brand new to D&D players, because I have done it before, mm-hmm. and I've seen what happened, and it leads to decision paralysis, and it bogs everything down. Mm-hmm. This group, having played several sessions of D&D Next, having said, these are the kind of players that we want to be, these are the kind of characters that we want to have, and showing the proficiency that they have in picking up the concepts, I think that I can introduce them to 4th edition and that we can hit the ground running. And the fact that we're doing it in Eberron, which is my favorite of favorites when it comes to D&D, is it has me doing jigs. So that is going to have me pretty excited, and I hope it sticks.
Yeah.
Because the other options, the whole reason that got this started thinking was Keith Baker actually posted something on his blog earlier this week about running Eberron for 13th Age. And there are some pretty big differences. One of the biggest differences is icons. And he discussed, you know, in 13th Age, icons are this in the setting that comes with the book. In Eberron, here are ways that you can translate them that makes sense. And it's a really interesting read. And I was just reading it going, man, I wish I was playing Eberron again. So we're gonna try playing Eberron, mm-hmm. I think. I believe. I still am waiting for initial confirmation for everyone, but I think it's going to happen. So that will be good
and goes to show that if you don't like what's currently being produced, or if what's currently being produced doesn't interest you or stops interesting you, the old stuff is still out there. If you don't want to play 4th edition, you want to play 3rd edition or 3.5, all that stuff still exists. You can go and pick it up and start playing it. So that, I think, is my core point about this whole deal. Be excited. If it's kind of shaping up to be maybe not what you want, the worst thing you should be is slightly disappointed. Being enraged, not necessarily
because
necessary.
Let's be absolutely brutally honest. If anything could have, quote-unquote, ruined Batman,
mm-hmm.
we know what movie it would have been.
Yeah, you're never going to get a Batman movie as bad as Batman and Robin. You're right. Just not.
Right.
It could be, and remember, Andy Warhol did a Batman movie. Still not as bad as Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
That was just really it. The only superhero movie I think that comes close to being as bad as Batman and Robin is Catwoman. And Catwoman is stunningly awful.
Yep.
I mean, Catwoman makes Jonah Hex look like The Shining.
Yep.
It's just real bad.
Yeah.
So, we do have some other movie news, however, in the same vein. As we mentioned, James Spader is going to play Ultron, who is the villain in Avengers 2.
Which I was excited about.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I like James Spader, and I liken it to this. If someone had told me prior to Iron Man that Paul Bettany was going to be Jarvis, I would have been like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Chaucer? From Knights to really? Jarvis? And then they did Jarvis. And I was like, fucking Paul Bettany. Absolutely. Go for it.
Yeah.
I think James Spader as Ultron is going to be interesting. And at the end of the day, trust the Whedon.
Yeah. Just let them do their thing.
All glory to the Hypno Whedon.
We've discussed Ultron in past comic books, created by Hank Pym, then turns around and attempts to overthrow Hank Pym. He also creates Vision, which I had a Twitter conversation about earlier. He creates Vision, who I think, if I had to guess, at some point in time, we're going to get Vision, because Vision is also connected to Scarlet Witch. Sexually connected to Scarlet Witch. And,
huh? That was something that I did not know.
Yeah, they were married for quite a while.
Also something I did not know.
Yeah, Scarlet Witch, when she was in the Avengers, was married to a robot.
And does not surprise me.
No, shouldn't. They have kids. But yeah, married to Scarlet Witch, who is going to be in Avengers 2, Electric Boogaloo, aka Ultron. So we're going to get a Hank Pym in Ant-Man movie. We're going to have Scarlet Witch. I think it makes sense that Vision is going to be around at some point in time. I also think it makes sense that Vision is likely going to be Vin Diesel. Because of things that have happened. Teasing it for a while, but he hasn't said exactly who he's going to be. But he did mention Vision at one point in time, and to me, I think it's possible. Plus, he kind of looks like Vision.
Yeah,
he looks like he could play Vision. He's got that kind of bulky physique that a Vision would want to have.
And Lord knows he could definitely use. Some Avengers cash coming his way.
Yeah.
Considering how much he spends making Riddick movies.
Yeah.
And if you want the absolute paragon level of geekdom. I'm sorry, you can't go any further than Vin Diesel. The man risks his entire considerable Hollywood fortune to make movies about his D&D character.
That's pretty strong.
These are true facts.
That's pretty strong.
These are true facts. And if you, I mean, honestly, I'll watch it. I've seen, I haven't seen Pitch Black, but I saw Chronicles of Riddick, which is going to make some people's head explode. But, you know, I'm definitely going to watch the next Riddick movie. Mm-hmm. Mostly because Macy said that she really wants to see the next Riddick movie because she believes that it's what happens to Katie Sackhoff, Starbuck. Whenever she's missing from Battlestar Galactica. Like whenever she flies off and disappears, or at the end of the film, or at the end of the series when she just, you know, does her thing, just in case there's one or two people out there that haven't seen it yet, go watch it. It so that you can be kind of upset about that too. She's like, this is where she goes, and this is what's happening next. And that's why she's going to see it, primarily so that she can continue the story of Starbuck. Mm-hmm. That's why she's going to go watch it. And That's a pretty legitimate reason.
It's a decent reason. So we're likely going to get we'll likely get Vision at some point in time. I think it's possible that Vin Diesel will be Vision, but we'll see. Since we haven't even gotten the character confirmed, that's putting the cart before the horse. We do know now that Bradley Cooper is going to be the voice of Rocket Raccoon for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep, Silver Linings Playbook to gun-toting mammal.
Well, gun-toting rodent.
Yeah, rodent, yeah.
his stock has risen considerably since Silver Linings Playbook.
Mm-hmm.
Considerably. Like yep. Higher than I can ever remember an actor. Because at one point in time, Bradley Cooper was just shit and everyone hated him. And now since Silver Linings Playbook, it's true. Bradley Cooper was a punchline. And since Silver Linings Playbook and a lot of the other things that he's doing, he's in another movie.
Well, The Hangovers.
Yeah, well, right. He was in The Hangover movies. He's in another movie coming out really soon.
He was in The Place Beyond the Pines, which we actually just were looking at. He's going to be in... American Sniper is in pre-production, according to his IMDb page. He is in Untitled Cameron Crowe Project, which has a lot of question marks next to it. American Hustle and Serena.
I think it's American Hustle that he's in. Yeah, American Hustle is David O. Russell's next film. David O. Russell did Silver Linings Playbook. So he's sort of becoming a David O. Russell actor, which when you consider what David O. Russell has done, many people consider him to be... like the current Scorsese. He did I Heart Huckabee, The Fighter.
I saw the trailer for Hustle. There's also an absolute gobsmacking amount of people in this. You got Jennifer Lawrence, Christian Bale, Amy Adams, De Niro, Jeremy Renner,
right.
Louis C.K., Michael Pena. Ton of people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about a guy who went from being a recurring character on Nip Tuck in 2009,
right?
Who was in the A-Team, which was a movie that did not do well, despite being a fine movie. He was a recurring character in Alias. He was back doing Special Victims Unit, being a one-off for Special Victims Unit. And he played the creepy brother in Wedding Crashers. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So he was playing second fiddle to Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn at one point in time. Yeah. Also, and now he's Golden Boy.
He's a ton in Alias. Was he like one of the main? Because Alias is one of those things I just haven't seen. You know,
I haven't either, honestly. He played a guy named Will Tippin. If you know who Will Tippin is, let us know, because I have no freaking clue.
Yeah.
So, he was also in a movie called The Midnight Meat Train. Things you find out about when you read IMDb pages.
Yeah. So there you go, folks. That's your Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah. I'm the reason that I'm really... Because I will be perfectly honest. I know very little about Guardians of the Galaxy. I know a little bit. I know the main characters. I sort of know the main storyline. But as far as it being the whole thing, I know very little. The reason I am interested, to a point where I wouldn't normally be interested in the movie at all. However, there is a reason I am interested in Guardians of the Galaxy. That reason is directed by James Gunn.
Yeah.
I love James Gunn. He wrote Lollipop Chainsaw, which was the best thing about that. Which, if you've ever played Lollipop Chainsaw, or you don't even have to play it, just go on YouTube and do what Nintendo doesn't want you to do, and
find some Let's Play
and go through some Let's Play. It is hilariously funny. He is a very, 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 very accomplished writer and producer. He did a movie called The Specials in 2000, which was a superhero movie.
Slither.
He also wrote Slither. He was working on the pilot for Humanzi, which came out to very high praise. He also did a web series for Spike TV called PG Porn, which is the funniest shit you will ever see in your life. Very funny. He's a really good actor. He's a really good director, and he's an incredibly funny writer. And he is writing, he did the screenplay for, the story for, and is directing Guardians of the Galaxy. This is by far his highest profile film. The fact that Marvel would look at a guy whose last big credit was Lollipop Chainsaw. As a director, his last credit was, well, movie 43. Which we don't talk about on this podcast. His last big credit was Super, which did not do... It was a very small movie. Did not do a whole lot. It starred Rainn Wilson and Ellen Page.
So, I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, known for Page is Scooby-Doo, Dawn of the Dead, movie 43, and Slither, which is... kind of all over the map.
Yeah. Now, movie 43, if you don't know, is a just terribly god-awful collection of skits a la Kentucky Fried Movie that had... I mean, Halle Berry was in it. Richard Gere was in it. It was done by the same... It was done by who put that thing together? Ugh, crap. I can't remember. It was done by a really famous duo who basically waited until everyone who were too polite to say no basically waited for their schedules to open so they could do Dennis Quaid, Greg Kinnear, Common, Will Sasso, Seth MacFarlane, Hugh Jackman, Kate Winslet, all in this terrible, 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 terrible movie.
Basically, none of them
did any press for it.
A ton of people who did, I remember seeing credits about, like little things like, you know, has all these people. I was like, wait, this has got to be a joke, right?
Yeah, no, it's not a joke.
Because the entirety of the marketing apparently were pop-up or push-out ads on websites.
Yeah, well, they ran a commercial. They ran some TV, too. It's the movie where you see Andy from Parks and Rec talking to the girl from Scary Movie, and she tells him she wants to take a dump on his chest.
That would be Chris Pratt.
Yeah, Chris Pratt. And the
chick who is playing Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord, in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right, the same. Brett Ratner also directed a piece of movie 43. So don't hold movie 43 against anybody in movie 43. Because there are some really good actors in movie 43. And none of them promoted the movie. So there you go. That is the reason I say all this only to say that is the reason that I'm super interested in Guardians of the Galaxy. Otherwise I genuinely wouldn't be because I don't know enough about the thing. And the idea is a little on first blush is a little silly.
It's like I will absolutely go see it. I'm interested.
I will too. I'm interested in it now because of who's in it, because of what I've seen, and because you have James Gunn directing it.
Yeah,
that's what interests me the most. So I think we have finally crashed through as much superhero movie news as we can manage.
Yeah, which there was a ton of it, and especially after last podcast, you know, there's. Yeah.
Quite a lot.
Yeah.
Something else happened this weekend that may have popped up on your radar. Nintendo, and I'm going to link this in the podcast page. It's worth going and taking a look at. Nintendo announced plans to release a new handheld called the Nintendo 2DS. Go take it. It looks unlike any handheld you've ever seen in your life. It's like a wedge. It's like a wedge with buttons and a screen.
You know, yeah, because I didn't really see this thing from the side before, but yeah, it's a wedge. It looks a bit like a doorstop with buttons and a screen.
It looks a bit like a doorstop. You're 100% right. Now, you might ask yourself, 2DS, it's rare that you come out with 3D, that you say, oh, 3DS, and then you say, okay, well, let's go to 2DS. Why would anyone want a 2DS over a 3DS? Because the option is 3D versus 2D. I mean, it's in the name, but that's what it is.
So why is it different than just DS, which is what we had before? Because
right.
Didn't we do this already? Didn't we have the DS, mm-hmm. and then they made it 3DS, which,
right.
okay, we kind of understand that progression. 2DS, aren't we going back to
right. well,
DS? Which is arguably like the biggest problem Nintendo has with this.
Not necessarily. Here's what you have to remember. The DS to the 3DS was like an NES going to a Super NES.
Yeah.
The 3DS to the 2DS is like going from the Super NES to like a compact Super NES, or the little thing that allowed you to play Game Boy games in your Super NES.
Right.
It's not an NES. This is not a DS. When you get your 2DS or your Nintendo DS cannot play 3DS games. They stopped making DS games. They started making 3DS games. The 2DS will be able to play 3DS games. It just won't be able to play them in 3D. Now, here's something that will really blow your mind, Russell, that you may not know. On the 3DS, there is a slider. Near the hinge on the right hand side that allows you to turn your 3DS into a 2DS. You can turn the 3D off by sliding the slider down. You can actually make the 3D less noticeable, less poppy outy, which is a technical term. You can slide it down, and it is not 3D anymore, it's 2D. Which leads you to ask this question. If the 3DS is already a 2DS, why are they producing a 2DS?
Right.
Because the 2DS will not be able to do anything that a 3DS cannot already do. Absolutely
yeah.
nothing. It can do less than a 3DS can do, actually.
Because the description is that we've seen is basically a 3DS laid flat, no hinge, and the depth slider is all the way down. That's all it is.
That is what this is. Now...
Yeah, but there is one very, very significant difference between them.
There is one. It's going to cost significantly less.
Yeah, like $50 less.
Right. Now, So it's a good move on Nintendo's part. Here's why. A, the 2DS is also going to be hardier than the 3DS because it does not include the hinge. And as you should know, if you've ever had a flip phone or a slide phone... As an adult using it, the hinge tends to get loose, tends to break at a certain period in time, you know, through repeated use, correct? Now imagine you're a 7-year-old.
Yep.
Yeah. Those things break real quick. The 2DS will not have that issue. It will be, for lack of a better term, solid state. You won't be able to do anything beyond that. So you'll have to deal with that. It's significantly cheaper, meaning parents can get it for birthday presents, because the 3DS is still in the $200 range, which is in the same range as a Wii, a little less expensive than a Wii, but not by a ton. So it's a good move on Nintendo's part marketing-wise. I think they'll sell a ton of them. Here's the problem, and I'm going to link an article written by Ben Kuchera that will go into this in much more detail and be presented in a much better way than I'm about to present it. If you're one of the guys that like the 3D on the 3DS, and I do, actually, not for every game, but for mini games, mini as in M-A-N-Y, not mini as in M-I-N-I, for mini games, I like the 3D. I have Dead or Alive Dimensions, which is fantastic. Fighting games on the 3DS are fucking incredible. I prefer it in 3D. I like to play it in 3D. I have Luigi's Mansion, Dark Moon. I play it in 3D. I have Street Fighter 4. I usually play it in 2D, just because I like the way it looks. This, if the 2DS sells really, really super well, it could spell the end of 3D games on the 3DS, because why would you, as a developer, produce a game with next level 3D when most people are not giving a shit? There are lots of people who play the 3DS with the 3D slider all the way down and play it as a 2D handheld. That is a subsection of people. I don't know if they will still retain a 3DS or if they will buy a 2DS just so they don't have the option, I guess. But the thing that is most concerning about the 2DS is that if it does really, really well and starts outselling the 3DS, developers are going to go, well, I'm not going to waste my time making games in 3D, which would suck if you're one of the people who likes the 3D, which I do, surprisingly enough. If you,
well, especially because you're a person that can't see 3D in a lot of other venues or a lot of other...
Right. I'm mostly monocular. With the glasses, I cannot really get 3D. I just don't get it. With the 3DS, I don't have that much of a problem. Maybe because I can slider it up all the way and I see it fine and, you know, there are things like... I mean, and there are other reasons not to like 3D. If you're playing a game in 3D, you kind of have to learn a new skill, which is being able to play without moving your face in a way that will make the 3D sort of fuck up. Because there's a window that you have to look at so it looks 3D.
Mm-hmm.
You have to stand there and look at it at a specific window. And having played the 3DS now quite a bit, I can actually put my hands right exactly where that window is, and I can move around and not lose the 3D perspective. Because if you torque your hands back or forth and you can't the screen, you lose 3D. And it's very hard to play when you're looking at a 3D game that's not in 3D, when you see multiple copies of it. The 2DS is cheaper than the 3DS because it only requires the two cameras, the front and the rear, whereas the 3DS has three cameras. It has one in the front and two in the rear on either side, which allows it to take pictures in 3D, which is something else you can do. So that's the overall arc of the 3DS versus the 2DS. I see the 2DS being primarily the kids' handheld. I think the way they're marketing it and the way they've produced it, that's what they at Nintendo are thinking as well.
Yeah.
Which is good for a couple of reasons. One, they're identifying that the handheld crowd is made up of more than just a kid and their Game Boy. They're looking at it as a legitimate console. I don't know if you I guess you could call it a handheld console.
Yeah, and they've tried in certain other marketing to, you know, to do that as well.
Yeah,
to lesser or greater extent.
Right, there were commercials with who was it that was in the commercials? Some really famous actress was playing Cooking Mama in one of their commercials. I don't.
Well, they had Penelope Cruz.
Penelope Cruz, sister. That's it.
They were playing several DS games. They also had the Zelda. Whenever they were doing Zelda on 3DS, they had
Robin Williams.
And his daughter.
Yeah. Whose name is Zelda. And she's named after the game. You did not know that about Robin Williams. That's fucking incredible. He's the best actor ever.
It's also an incredibly heartwarming commercial and it's worth watching. But they also did a kind of, I think if I remember correctly, they did a questionable series of ads that are like, you know, I'm not a gamer type of ads to try. And I think primarily sell the 3DS to women. And it didn't exactly resonate as well as some of the other things. The Penelope Cruz commercials are
yeah, they're wonderful. They're great on multiple levels. Level one, Penelope Cruz is in them.
Yeah, Penelope Cruz is in them. As is her sister.
As is her sister, who is Penelope Cruz's sister. And that's that. Let's just say that shows a strong lineage for the hotness, because they are beautiful women. So and we talked about something that's really bounced around in my brain enough that it got me to buy a 3DS. The reason I bought a 3DS a couple of months ago, because I'm not a console gamer normally. I owned an Xbox 360. I ended up selling it because I just didn't play it. It was a matter of not wanting to sit down in front of my TV and playing it. I bought a 3DS because we did a podcast quite a while ago where out of the podcast came the theorem that Nintendo is a step ahead of everybody, because it was the whole Nintendo Wii U is doing terribly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The theorem was Nintendo is, again, a step ahead of everybody. When they came out with their non-HD original Wii intended for casual players, most people looked at that, and the present company included, looked at that and said, what? No. That will never do well. It outsold both of them. It outsold both the Xbox and the PlayStation. It did phenomenally well. The theorem that we got out of the podcast was Nintendo is moving into the handheld market. They're getting rid of, they're decentralizing the hooked up to your TV market of consoles, and they're really looking at the handheld market as being the next place people are going to want to go. They essentially invented, for in the same way that Nirvana invented grunge, they invented casual gaming. They invented, you know, people getting together and having Mario Kart nights with people who don't know what the hell they're doing. Getting together and playing Wii with your friends, most of whom it's the only video game they will ever play. Outside of Angry Birds on their phone. Hello, mobile gaming.
Yeah.
You could sell, and we went through this on the podcast, you could sell to people, hey, why play games on a device that was never intended to play games if what you want to do is play games? Why not get a device that's intended to play games, that is also mobile, that you can play games on, because A, the games are going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have more fun. B, you're not wrecking the battery life of your other device, which is a phone. And C, the games are better. I mean, it's games, games, games. You have Mario, you have Sonic, you have Mario Kart, you have Zelda. You have everything you could possibly want on this one device. I could see them selling it that way. And that's why I bought one. And I'll be damned if that's not exactly the way that I use it. Yeah. I sometimes, instead of watching TV at night, if it's something, if there's nothing on that I want to see before I go to bed, I'll flip open the 3DS, play a little Mario Kart. I'll play a little DOA. I'll play a little Scribblenauts. Do a little ghost sucking in Luigi's Mansion. I've done.
Let's be honest. Can you really play a little Scribblenauts?
No, you have to play Scribblenauts until your eyes bleed.
Yeah,
I've done multiplayer on the 3DS with a friend of mine playing Luigi's Mansion. Awesome time. Awesome time. Yep. And you do it just through the internet, just like a console. Look at the Wii U. They have the little tablet handheld thing too. See? Nintendo's playing the slow game, playing the innovation game. I think the 2DS is part of that. Really trying to broaden the mobile gaming market. Now, if it has an impact on 3D games, I will not be super, super happy about it, because 3D games are fun.
Right. And especially, and I keep going back to this, you know, they're doing 3D in a way that you can actually see, which is, I think, a very important thing. And the only way that that's going to get better is if people, you know, actually make it. I mean, look at the Kinect on the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't really have that awesome of a Kinect experience with the first generation Kinect. The new Kinect is coming out. They're not going to remove it from the Xbox One. Everyone is going to have a Kinect if you buy an Xbox One. That's a reality. That's not going to change because that's the only way that they're going to convince developers to develop stuff for it.
Right, exactly.
Because everyone has it. So, you know, at some point, when you do this kind of innovation and when you push forward with that, you should expect and prepare for resistance. Mm-hmm. Because you're not immediately giving, you know, the massive consumer base exactly what they want, which is free access to HBO without a cable subscription.
Mm-hmm.
HBO. If they did that, you know, if that's not innovation. That's giving the consumers what they want.
Right.
Innovation is trying to go into an area that you think people would go and then trying to drag enough of them with you so that you can make the expense worth it.
Right. It's what Apple did with the iPod.
Yeah.
Instead of trying, because MP3 players existed and were $10 a piece when Apple came out with the iPod. But an MP3 player was something that allowed you to take your MP3s places and listen to them. When iPod came out, what did they say? Take X number of hours of music with you. Take your music library with you. Take your music everywhere you want to go. That's how they sold the iPod. They didn't sell it by saying it had 900 gigabytes and, you know, nerd words, as people who don't know what those words mean would call them. That's not the way they sold it. They very specifically sold it as take your music with you. Take your music on the go. Don't take a CD player. Forget your Walkman. All of your music can be right, because this is a time before cell phones were, or before smartphones were huge, and people just put their music on their phone. This was the time of the iPod, and that's how they sold it. Well, once they marketed it properly and people started to get it a lot more, look what happened to CD sales. That's what Nintendo is trying to do. They're trying to get as many people with their hands wrapped around a mobile console, because then look at the developers who are going to go, you know what? They're making a ton of money mobile. Maybe we need to start thinking about mobile. Oh, well, we can put it on Microsoft's mobile device. Wait a minute. Microsoft doesn't have a mobile device. Oh, well, we could put it on PlayStation's mobile device, the PlayStation Vita. Oh, wait a minute. No one buys the PlayStation Vita.
The PlayStation 4, the most expensive marketing campaign for the Vita ever. Yeah,
so I think they're putting themselves in good position. I genuinely hope the 2DS becomes sort of the market-wise becomes sort of the little kid version of the 3DS, and you start seeing, you know, Barbie Horse Adventure in 2D, but we still get the 3D games that adults can enjoy, as well as some kids, but should enjoy in moderation because it hurts your eyes.
Yeah, and, you know, it is, at the end of the day, it's definitely going to be an intro to DS gaming, whether you do it 3D or 2D.
Mm-hmm.
That I think a lot of people are now going to look at more, because especially considering the high rise of just the overall cost for gaming now. You know, they're getting closer to that kind of arguably mythical $100 price point, which I think is a really important place to be.
Yeah, the 2DS is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $150.
Yeah.
That's for a system and one game, one would assume. I guess I can't assume for the game, but if that game is a Mario game, which is a pretty common thing you see in Nintendo consoles.
Yeah.
Games are about $35, so you're looking, as far as just the system is concerned, pretty much right on that $100 mark.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So we will see. But for now, we're going to have to close the podcast down. It's about that time. As always, our music is Out Prop featuring Esset. Check them out on uhort.no. Check us out on Twitter. We are at GIR Podcast. We will answer your questions or take your questions to the podcast. You can also shoot us an email to girpodcast@gmail.com. For Russell, this is Jeremy. Thanks for listening.
Honey, have you seen the 2DS? Yes, the doorstop. Yes, have you seen the doorstop?